Today we have a very nice subject called Developing Moral Courage. Developing Moral Courage. Physical courage we all know. When somebody is in a battle or somebody is in a major conflict. But when do we need to practice moral courage? And why do we need to? We are all spiritual aspirants. The fact that we are here, we are talking about meditation, we are learning about meditation, we are on a spiritual journey of evolution. We have evolved through many species, whether you believe in the theory of evolution or creation, it doesn't matter. But the fact is that we are at this state of manhood or humankind, and that is the highest state of creation by the Lord. But the scriptures tell us that there is a higher state, a state of supermanhood, what the saints and the prophets like Jesus and Buddha and Guru Nanak and Shankaracharya, they all reach that state, and that is where we need to evolve. And that journey is a journey within. It's not a journey outside. It's not, you cannot get in a car and go there or take a plane or a submarine. It is a journey within. But it needs effort, it needs energy, it needs courage. It's not easy. Anything that is worth obtaining in life takes effort. And this is the highest achievement that a person can attain in their lifetime. There is no greater achievement, whether you are Bill Gates or whether you are Michael Jordan or whether you won the Olympics or whether, there is no greater achievement than to reach that inner state of perfection. So it needs courage. And what are the steps that we need to practice to reach that state? And what are the obstacles that will come in the way? We'll try to cover that today. So the first quality that we need to develop is patience and persistence. Patience and persistence. Because I said that effort is required, and there will be obstacles, there will be problems. People may make fun of us, people may criticize us, people may create problems. And we see the lives of so many great saints, they were not only created problems, but they were killed. They were either crucified or tortured. But patience and persistence is necessary. It's not something that will come overnight. And this reminds me of the mother who was praying to God. She was the mother of three young boys. And she said, "Oh God, give me patience, but hurry." She wants patience, but she wants it right now. She wants quickly. And that is what we need also. We need patience and we need persistence. The ability to stick to. Because once I have decided that that is my goal in life, then I have to let nothing come in the way of my spiritual goal. And for that, the next quality is forbearance. Forbearance is also defined as titiksha, the ability to withstand pinpricks of life, because life is going to give you pinpricks. Sometimes there will be joy, sometimes there will be sorrows, sometimes there will be problems. And constantly there will be difficulties. But how I can tolerate them, how I can cheerfully bear them, forbearance, without complaining, and how can I handle life's problems? And that is going to happen in life. So similarly, in life, problems will come to everybody. You cannot say, why in life do I have the problems? Why do I have to put up with it? No, if I can solve the problem, if I can get rid of it or I can take care of it, then I do it. With my abilities, with my strength. But suppose the problem is too much, or this person is somebody that I cannot, you know, handle, then I avoid that problem. Then I try to make my way around it and then live with it to the best of my ability. You know, not surrendering or not with the, you know, suffering or that. Okay, you know, in life, as our founder Swami Chinmayananda says, in life you get what you deserve. You do not get what you desire, you get what you deserve. And only He knows what I deserve. And having talked about the law of karma, everything that happens to me is as a result of my karmas, either in this life or previous lifetime. We have talked about that many times. And so when life's problems come, I cheerfully bear them. If I can solve them, I solve them. Otherwise, I say, okay, this problem in this my life cannot be solved, so let me bear it to the best of my ability. In this struggle, self-confidence is necessary. The understanding that I am on the right path, and once I am on the right path, then nothing can sway me from my goal. And I know that I have the ability, because each and every one of us has the divine presence in us. We have the Lord as Om or as Jesus or as life or as consciousness. And if the prophets, if Jesus and Buddha and Shankaracharya and Guru Nanak and all those great prophets could reach that, I also can reach it because I have that same divinity in me. I am a son of God, as Jesus said. Only thing is, he knew that and we don't know it. But we are all children of God. We all have that same abilities. We all have the same. So I have to have self-confidence. And how does that self-confidence come? First, I have to be sure that my goal is right. And then reading the scriptures, meeting spiritual teachers, and learning from them, reading the books, and also by my own independent thinking, I have to come to this conclusion that this is my goal. Nobody can give it to me, a teacher or the Bible or the church or the priest or the guru can only show me the path, but I have to decide that this is my goal. And once I decide, then I have to have the self-confidence, the clarity of thinking that no matter what happens, I will not be, and I will achieve that goal. Unless you do that, no goal in life, even if you want to do very well in your exams, in your finals, or you want to do well in your career, or you want to do well in sports, or in business, or in finance, or in journalism, everywhere I have to have that self-confidence. But it is all the more necessary in the spiritual field. The choosing of the right path is you want to evolve, and the scriptures and the guru, the teacher, is the guide that will tell us what is the path that suits for us. But generally, it comes from within, because each one of us is unique. Each one of us is a unique child of God. And some people may find the path of service better. Some people may find the path of singing songs and love. Some people may like the path of knowledge. Some people may like the path of doing yoga and penance. And so the path will determine upon your interest, upon your inclinations. But the way to know that I am evolving spiritually, the way to know that I am evolving spiritually or that I am on the right path is that what I find is that things that used to bother me last year, if they don't bother me today or don't bother me as much, that means I am progressing. So I think if you yourself will know, your mind will be more calmer, you'll have more equipoise, you'll be more happier about yourself, more self-confident, more cheerful. So as you are evolving, you will know it yourself. But I think generally the call has to come from within. The teacher or the scriptures can only be a guide, but they cannot actually walk the path for you. Another thing that takes me away from this spiritual goal is worry. And what is worry, and why do we worry? So they say that we worry for two different reasons. One is something happened in the past. I did something wrong, or some problem came, or some tragedy came, or some. And then I say, why did I do that? And so I keep dwelling upon the past. I should not have done that. He should not have done that. She should not have said that. And in the past, I have never succeeded. I have always failed. Just because I failed one time, so I am useless. And so by constantly dwelling upon the past and and regretting it and then worrying about it and then saying I shouldn't have. What we are doing is we are dissipating our mental energies. The past is already gone. It's already a thing of the past. It's already happened. It's not something we can change. I cannot go back and undo if I said something to somebody or I did something wrong or some tragedy happened in my life or some difficulties came or I failed. Say I failed at something. I cannot undo it. I cannot change it. I cannot take it back. But constantly remembering about it, constantly living in the past, constantly complaining about it, constantly dwelling upon it, all I'm doing is dissipating my mental energy. And a distressed mind or a stressed mind cannot progress. The other worry we have is worry about the future. And people say, you mean I should not worry, you know, if there's a problem going to come tomorrow or next week or next month? We are not saying that one shouldn't plan, one should not prepare. But worrying about a problem that is coming to me next week or next month, what purpose does it serve? Am I achieving anything by worrying about it? Majority of the times, what we worry about it actually never happens. And I worried so much about it and oh really, you know, it didn't even happen. Or if it happens, it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. You say, oh my God, unnecessarily I worried about it. I worried about my test, or I worried about meeting this person, or I worried about this job interview, or I worried about this particular challenge. And we find that the problem A, either doesn't happen, or B, it is not as bad as I thought it would be. So that's why there is a beautiful saying in English, we will cross the bridge when we come to it. And what we do is, even before I have gotten to the bridge, I think about all the problems. How about if the bridge is broken? How about if it is not, you know? And all those things we worry about. So they say, that's why Eckhart Tolle in the book, The Power of Now, he talks about that. He says, the only thing you have in your hand is the present. The past you cannot change. The future has not yet arrived. But if in the present you do what is right, you put your best effort, you focus on the job at hand, that what am I supposed to do at this moment, the future will take care of itself. What I am today is as a result of my past actions. And what I will be in the future will be determined by my present. So live in the present, work and do what is best, and then let, because worrying is you are carrying, it's like you are riding in a train and then you are carrying the bag on your head. And somebody says, why are you carrying the bag? Oh, I like to carry my bag. No, you are in the train, so put the bag down, let the train carry it. And so we are in this train that the Lord is carrying us in. And let him carry the worries. Let him carry the load of the worries. Leave it by the side. And you just ride peacefully and cheerfully in this carriage and let him take you. So freedom from worry, I think in my mind, is the most important quality that will help us in the spiritual journey. The power of now, I think that is the best. And once you practice all these, you have patience, forbearance, self-confidence, freedom from worry, then automatically you become cheerful, enthusiastic, and have equipoise. And cheerfulness, you say, oh, how can I be cheerful? You know how many physical problems I have, how many emotional problems I have, how many work-related problems, and how much stress I have. Yes. Everybody has. There is nobody in this world who does not have. Physical problems are bound to come to everybody. Some people have more, some people have less, some people have them earlier, some people have them later. But we are all aging and we are all getting to that stage where physical problems will come. Emotionally, joys and sorrows. One day I'll be happy, one day I'll be unhappy. Intellectually, one day I'll have success, one day I'll have failure. But if my goal is spiritual unfoldment, as I am getting closer to the self within, the Lord's presence within, who is the source of all the joy, all the compassion, all the love, all the beauty, everything in this world comes from Him. So the closer I am, the more cheerful I have to become. I will become. There is no doubt about it. And focusing on that, that my goal is Him, then that goal, that His presence makes me cheerful, makes me enthusiastic. And then once I have that cheerfulness, that enthusiasm, then I become very balanced in the midst of joys and sorrows. I go through them. Yes, today there is joy. Okay, good. Tomorrow there is sorrow. Okay, good too. There is this story. There was this monk who lived on the outside of the village. And he had a small hut, and the people from the village used to visit him. And they would take him food, and they would ask him for advice. He was a very wise, you know, learned person, little elderly. And this one beautiful girl used to go and visit him and take him food, and she was very devoted to him. And it so happened that the girl got pregnant. Now her boyfriend, with whom she had got pregnant, had left town and gone away, and he said, I don't want anything to do with this child. And many years back, when it was a shame to get pregnant, and she was so worried, and what is she going to tell, and whom is she going to tell? So in her fear, or in her, she just said, oh, I got pregnant with that monk, you know, outside the village, and he's the one made me pregnant. I don't know why she said it. And everybody in the village, my God, look at this person, he pretends to be holy, and this is what he has done. So they went and they didn't beat him because they still respected, but they cursed him and abused him. And they said, you know, you are the father of, you have done this, you have done that. So he said, is that so? He said, yeah, that is so. You should be ashamed. So he didn't say anything. After a few months, the baby was born. So they said, this baby is yours. You have to take care of it, and you have to take care of this girl. He said, is that so? He said, yeah, that is so. You have to do it. He said, okay. So he started taking care of her, and he started doing some little odd jobs so he could earn some money for the baby and for the little girl, for that girl, and took care of them and all. And he cheerfully continued to do that. And then a few years later, the real father of that child started missing that little girl, his friend, and then he had made a living for himself. He had become successful wherever he had gone. So he said, I have to go back and find my childhood sweetheart, and then maybe she has a baby. And so he came back, and he said, told everybody, you know, this is my wife, and this is my child, and I love her, and I want to take her back with me, you know, to the other town where I am very successful. And so the people were very apologetic. You know, they were feeling so bad. Look at this wise person. He was so honest. He was so nice. And we cursed him, and we called him names, and we abused him, and we spit on him and all that. So they said, you know, we are very sorry, you know, you are not the father of the child, and we are sorry for saying all these things. He said, is that so? That's what he said. You know, for him it was the same. Abuse and praise was the one and the same. And that is what these great masters teach us. That be balanced. Life will throw you bouncers. Always life is not going to be easy. And one-pointedness is very important, as all this must have taught you, that anybody who has been successful in anything in this world, any endeavor, you have to be focused. You want to do well in your college, you have to be focused. Parents, we always tell our children, remember, you're going to college to study, you're going to school to do well. And same thing, a person who is successful in business, who is successful in, you know, he starts his business and makes it, you know, whether it's Bill Gates or whether it's Rockefeller or Ford or Ambani or any of these great industrialists, they started from small beginnings, but they were one-pointed. They were well-focused. So on the spiritual path, one-pointedness only comes when I know my goal and I realize that every other goal in life is secondary. Yes, I have to have a living. I have to get married, I have to have children, I have to take care of them, I have to have a job, I have to have a career. But all of these goals are secondary to my spiritual goal, and that has to be very clear. And once that happens, then that person automatically gets detachment. automatically gets, everything else I do it as my duty, but that is not my main purpose in life. And the word detachment has been described very beautifully in the Ramayana, which is a scripture which is several thousand years old, where the teacher tells the student, he says, that person has dispassion, has detachment, who can give up his things and achievements like grass. So I was thinking about it, why does he say like grass? You know, I mean, like you say, just like a piece of grass. You give up your achievements and your things. And then I started thinking about it and I came up with my own little example. It's kind of, you know, it's like you are sitting on the soccer field. You know, you're sitting on the grass, you didn't bring your chair. And so you're sitting on the ground and your son or daughter or brother or sister is playing soccer, running around. And it's an hour and a half game and it's a half an hour break. So for 2 hours, you're sitting and doing nothing. And so you start playing with the grass and you make a little, you know, little circle, and then you make a little triangle, and then you make a little square, and you make a little house of that grass, and you know, you're just playing with it. And then when the game is over, you get up, you don't take that, those little toys you made, you just leave it, and then there's grass on your clothes and you just dust it off and get off. So this grass represents my things that I have, and this, what I made, represents my achievements. And we find in life that we are very attached to our things, but more important, we are attached to our achievements. I did this, I did that, I'm so wonderful, I did such a great job. And how does that come? Because I have the feeling of I am mine. I did it and it is mine. But I have to remember that whatever I have, even my body, my intelligence, my abilities, everything are a gift from Him. And so whatever I have achieved in this world, it may be a great achievement or it may be a small achievement. Maybe I got an A in my exam, or maybe my child got an A. But whatever achievements I have, I immediately dedicate to Him. The moment somebody praises and says, oh, you did such a wonderful job, you just dedicate it to the Lord. Thank you, Lord. It is because of your grace. It is you who have done it, and I have been just become the instrument. You have used me to do this job, and I am grateful and I'm thankful, and whatever praise I have, I dedicate it to you. So right away, such a person has no arrogance, has no pride, has no sense of ownership, has no sense of doership, because everything he dedicates to the Lord. So detachment is very important. Detachment from your things. And the way it happens is that, okay, if I have something, it is fine. If I don't have it, I'm still fine. So with that understanding comes detachment, and also the sense of achievement. That yes, of course, one should be happy and one should be confident and proud, but it should not become arrogance, and one should dedicate it to the Lord. And obviously the last one, because we are all here in the meditation class, it is prayer and meditation. They say in prayer, you talk to God, and in meditation, God talks to you. Talking about prayer reminds me of this story. There was this priest, and this, I told this story many years ago, but most of you are new, so I'm sure you won't mind hearing it again. But anyway, this priest and this taxi driver were driving, and it was a terrible traffic, and they got into a multiple car accident, and they both died. The taxi driver and the priest, and they died and they went to heaven, and that day a lot of people had died, so there was a long line to get into the pearly gates. And so the priest was standing in the line and the taxi driver, and they were waiting, and Saint Peter was judging whether you belong to heaven or hell. He had all your records. And so it so happened that one of the angels comes and tells the taxi driver, come on, you go to heaven. And so the priest got very upset. He said, look, I have been a priest all my life. I spent all my life preaching and, you know, talking to God, and I gave my whole life, and this taxi driver gets taken to heaven before me. We both died and came at the same time. He gets very angry. So when his turn comes to Saint Peter, he gets up there and he has long complaint, you know, what is this? And so Saint Peter said, wait a minute. You said you were preaching, right? He said, yeah. He said, okay, remember, when you were preaching in church on Sunday, the people were sleeping. Majority of the people in the church were sleeping when you were preaching. But when this taxi driver was driving, they were all praying. So he brought more people to Jesus than you did. So prayer is very helpful because it brings us closer to the Lord. But more powerful than prayer is meditation. And that's why the scriptures tell us, meditate, 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 and meditate. Because in meditation, I actually come close to my own spiritual presence, come close to the Lord's presence in me. And I realize that the power in me is that same divine power that is pervading everywhere. What we call as Buddha or Jesus or Allah or Krishna or Shiva, whatever you call him, it is that all-pervading consciousness that is the life principle in me. So in meditation, when I experience that life within me, that joy, that bliss, that peace, then a true meditator who experiences that joy then does not depend on the world for his happiness. And once he has experienced that fruit, that sweet nectar, then for such a person, the spiritual path becomes very easy. And that's what they say, that the more you meditate, the more fun it becomes. The more you enjoy, the more you benefit. You notice the benefits of that. So they say regular meditation is the best way to advance spiritually, to progress on the spiritual path. And that's why we assemble here every Thursday. And the idea is that whatever we learn here, the techniques of meditation, one has to go home and practice and apply them and meditate regularly, because you will notice such a change in your life and such an evolution. And meditation is the fastest way to reach that spiritual goal. All other techniques are good, you know, service of the poor, helping, you know, the poor like Mother Teresa and Saint Francis is very good. Praying to him with love and affection is very good. Reading the Bible and the Quran and the Bhagavad Gita is very good. But meditation combines all three, and meditation is the direct path. So that's why when you develop this moral courage, these are the steps, and ultimately we reach that stage where you can detach from the world and hold on to him. And why wouldn't he take care of you? So I think if you leave your fate in his hands, make him the chauffeur and tell him, Lord, you take me wherever you want. You are my driver. That's what we hear in the Bhagavad Gita. The teacher, the Lord is the teacher, is actually his driver. He's his chauffeur. He drives his chariot and takes it. And he said, Lord, you are my chauffeur. You take me wherever you want. And once you surrender to him, then it is his job to take you safely across all these problems. It does not mean I don't put my effort. I put my effort, but at the end of the day, you say, Lord, I have done what I could. Now the rest is up to you. So having that attitude of surrender to him is very important.